Welcome to AGAM the Climate Podcast, a literary podcast about climate consciousness and crisis, but without jargon. We live in a time of uncertainty. Our future is still being written, which means there's still hope. Here we host conversations with writers and artists whose stories we need to guide the way. I'm Padma Perez with Joseph Santos Lyons. Thank you for joining us. For the book AGAM, Filipino Narratives on Uncertainty and Climate Change, contributors were sent a photograph to use as a writing prompt. They were asked to consider the words uncertainty and ambiguity while avoiding words and phrases such as climate change, global warming, adaptation, and mitigation. This process produced 24 poems and narratives in 8 Philippine languages paired with 26 images. In Season 1, we bring you the voices behind the stories and poetry in the book. Here is Mei Ling Su reading an excerpt from Power Couple.
We are a power couple. We're amazing individuals and even more amazing together. We're Beyoncé and Jay-Z, Victoria and David, Will and Jada, Bill and Hillary, Michelle and Barack. We're picture perfect and pitch perfect. We are a power couple. We have no name you would recognize. We're invisible until we're at our most desperate, begging for relief. Yet, we persist. We will not die. During our childbearing years, we fruitfully multiplied. We have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. We have nothing to give them but the will to survive. If they persist, we will not die.
Hey, Padma.
Joseph, I'm really excited about this episode.
Yeah, so such a unique conversation to have, especially at the sort of intersections of literary and climate, with someone who also has a background as an erotica writer and an adult entertainer.
Exactly.
So good.
Yes, and we didn't say it explicitly, but she clearly takes a feminist stance.
Absolutely.
As a mother and as a performer or producer of erotica and pornography. So our guest now is Mei Ling Su, and she's from here, from the Philippines, but she's now based in the U.S. And she was anointed a porn saint in Italy.
A porn saint.
I think, and I'm choosing to point this out because we're very proud as Filipinos to have a canonized saint as well. And now we know that we also have a porn saint
right on. In
Mei Ling Su. And she was nominated for the Feminist Porn Award in 2010. And she wrote her piece entitled Power Couple for AGAM, Filipino Narratives on Uncertainty and Climate Change. And she's also written a novel series revolving around the character of Lilith.
Lilith, right. Well, we hope that you enjoy this show and her reading of Power Couple and the interview with Padma and I. Hello, Mei. It's so good to have you on the show today.
So good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So
thank you for making time.
And it's incredible to sort of be able to connect with you. It sounds like you're on the East Coast, and
yes,
we are here in Manila, in Quezon City,
yes,
at Studio Z.
Hi, Manila.
And that you've been sort of, you're like in the remote part of Maine right now. Is that right?
Yes, I am in the middle of the woods in Maine, the United States. Ooh. And I'm really happy to connect with you guys all the way out on the other side of the world.
Well, and we hope
in
to have you come
jungle.
Back to visit too, to come back to your hometown.
Yes.
Well,
we'd love to.
We're super excited to be able to connect with you, especially after the work and the contributions you made to AGAM, Filipino Narratives on Climate and Uncertainty.
Yep. Yeah, I was so happy to be part of it. My dearest friend, the editor, Regina Abuyuan, and also the photographer, Jose Enrique Soriano, were really, really good friends of mine. So
that's great. Yeah. That's awesome.
So it was Regina that reached out to you.
Yes, Regina is a dear, dear old friend of mine from high school. So we've been in touch all these years. I'm not going to say how long. But, yeah, she invited me to be part of the project, and I was very excited to be part of it. And then when they sent me the photos, well, one photo that Jose Enrique Soriano took during the Typhoon Haiyan, I was so touched. I felt like it was like they sent it specifically for me just to like really rein me in and snag me into this project. It was it spoke to me in a very personal way because my husband and I collaborate on a lot of projects together, and so we consider ourselves like a really tight team, really a power couple, if you may. And that's why I named it that. I saw these people, I saw their faces, and I thought, you know what? They only call power couples people that are known in the media. Famous people, Barack Obama and Michelle Obama, you know, Bill and Hillary, etc. And why not these people? Why not these people that are on the front lines, people who may not be known, but they're working just as hard and their efforts are never acknowledged on the world stage. So, I thought I'd paint a little bit of a picture of those two lives, very different lives, but still just the same. You know, they're just as powerful.
Very, very powerful. Well, let's start there. If you actually could say a little bit more about the first image that you received and to sort of describe it for us.
Yeah, there's a couple. I would say they're maybe a little bit older than middle age. They're likely empty nesters. At best, their kids may have gone through university. Hopefully, they're employed somewhere in maybe a big city there, or maybe in a different country. Maybe their kids have gone off to get work somewhere, like in Europe or in America. And it's just the two of them now in their little house somewhere in, like, you know, Tacloban. And this happens. they get a storm that's a huge, huge storm, and now they have to rebuild their lives over again, because I think this happens pretty often, maybe more than once a year. And you can just see on their faces, like they work very hard. They're brown, they're wrinkled, they are no nonsense, no bullshit. Can I say that?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
So how was the process for you? You received your image, and I love how you wove a story around the couple that's in the photo that you received, and then the Agam team set out this process where you were asked to write a piece on climate change, but there were words that you weren't allowed to use. How did you experience that, and how did that impact the way you did the piece?
I don't know. I guess I just put myself in their shoes. My husband and I work very hard. We're hardworking. We do our best, you know, like we both went to college, worked our way up. You know, we didn't come from money. We both really tried our best to do what's right, what's expected of us, this and that. And I know that they do too. So I put myself in their shoes and tried to imagine what their life is like. And then also drew from my life, like, okay, well, we're the same. We really are the same. We're just in different places. We're dealing with different elements, but in our hearts, we want the best for our kids. We want to provide for our family. We want the same thing, food, shelter, you know, love, all this stuff. I wanted to tell that story. I wanted to connect the two lives that seem so different, and bring that together, but also show the difference.
Right.
Different system of care.
Well, and May, in your piece, you present two different perspectives. And so What is it about these two perspectives that made for good climate change storytelling?
What's happening, I think, is that a lot of the big power couples, you know, these people in first world countries, developed countries, we use a lot of resources to make things happen. You know, emissions and our carbon footprint is huge. These people jet around all over the world, making things happen, you know, and I think it's interesting that one of the things that is asked is that if something bad were to happen, some catastrophic thing happens due to climate change, would it equalize everyone? Would we all be in the same boat? Would the rich people be just as in trouble as the poor people? I actually don't think so. I think that there is definitely a disparity between the two groups of people. People that are, it's just like in war, there's people making the deals and then there's people on the front lines.
Right.
And it's the same thing with climate change. There's people making the deals, you know, the Green New Deal. We've got the Paris Agreement. We've got the Kyoto Protocol. But you've got the people on the front lines, people that are living on the edges, people that are really affected by all of these elements that are coming to play. And who's going to speak for them? We need someone, maybe a representative from that group of people who are actually experiencing the first, you know, and maybe the biggest effects of climate change to speak up there.
Right. You've answered my question without my having to ask it about how some people keep saying that. Climate change and all its impacts, the rising sea levels, the bleaching of coral reefs, and the stronger, more frequent storms are going to work like equalizers. But as you said, it's going to make certain people more vulnerable. And then there are people and they're the ones calling the shots, making the decisions that don't feel the impact in the same way that people That's on right. the edge. I like how you said that about it, these people being on the edge. It brings me to the project we're working on now, which is another book that takes the AGAM process to a more international scale. And we're working with writers in Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean and in Asia, and going through the similar process, asking them to go through the similar process that you went through. And the binding theme or concept that we've been building on is edges.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
How very exciting. Mm-hmm. I look forward to reading that one.
Yeah.
May, I'd love to follow up as well about the power couple concept. And when you think about the class disparities, what are some of the things that really came up for you as you were imagining the couple in the photo prompt that you received? And what was the power that you saw in that couple?
Well, I guess what it is that they don't have the tools that we in the more developed world has. Their power comes from just raw strength. They always say, they're so resilient. You know, you see it in the news.
Such
whenever
a buzzword.
There's some horrible thing happens, all these resilient people, blah, blah, blah. I actually grew to hate that word.
Many people
Because it almost seems like, oh, it's okay. We can keep doing what we do because this is what we do. They're going to be fine. They're resilient.
That's right.
And it's like, wait, hold on. We have to take care of them. They don't have the tools we do, and they're not using as much resources as we do. So it's really sad, like that, you know, they don't plug in that much as much as we do. They don't use as much of the emissions and fossil fuels as we do, and yet they're the first to be affected, and maybe they're the most affected by what we do. So it's not a really good balance. It's a very awful balance. So we've got, you know, I'm just going to say the proverbial people up on with the mansion on the hill,
right,
using up all the resources and yet not really being affected, maybe until the last minute when that final tidal wave hits them. I don't know. But the people that use the least are also the most affected. And so their power is so just raw power, just themselves, their own selves. And at the end, I even talked about like how, because this is also another difference, is that it seems to me that the poor people, the poorer people are, the more children they have. Mm-hmm. And then the richer people are, the less children they have. And in a sense, that's the only power they have is manpower. Maybe they have more children to help rebuild their worlds and help each other. It's like a teamwork kind of a thing to pull their resources together. And that's the only resource they have is their strength.
Yeah. And it makes me imagine, too, how, you know, if they have a larger family and they have less resources, they have to really build on that teamwork even more to make sure that their kids are provided for, that they have a safe place to be. So there's a lot of power there.
My dad's family, there was eight children in my dad's family. And what they did was, as soon as my dad finished college, started working, then he started giving money for the next kid to go to school, and it goes on. And I think that's quite common in a lot of Filipino families.
Yes.
To put each other through school like that and have a better life.
Yeah. And so I want to turn now to you and your relationship with climate, but before that, because we're talking about work also and how work for many is the source of power. It's what we pour our strength into, but it's also where our power resides in the work we do. So I'm interested in your books. You're the author of two books of erotica, and you have one forthcoming.
Yes.
Tell us about your novels.
Okay. It's a series, and it's based actually on the very first the most exciting fantasy book I've ever read. I've read as a child is the Bible. So long before Star Wars, I was really into it. I read the Bible and was really captivated by the stories. And so the first Lilith book is basically it's tying together the Genesis, the first few books of Genesis. There were a lot of questions there for me. And I did a lot of research on the Torah, the Jewish Midrash, rabbinical texts, trying to find, you know, how do they explain these holes? And then also what else? I went into Epic of Gilgamesh, a lot of Babylonian, Sumerian texts, and tried to tie these stories together and see if we can piece together a creation myth that is more complete. There's also creative liberties in there that I threw in because, there was a lot of begetting that was happening back then that wasn't really fleshed out, and I fleshed it out a bit more. So that is basically Lilith. One is Lilith. Lilith, Queen of the Demons. That's the first book. It's Lilith. It's the Garden of Eden. It's Lilith. It's Adam. It's God. And then later on, when Lilith leaves the Garden of Eden, we've got Eve. And of course, we've got the devil to provide our conflict in the story. So that's the first book. And it was very exciting. I couldn't believe I pulled it off.
Well done.
But, congratulations.
The second book was Lilith's Journey Through Mesopotamia. This leaves the Bible. This goes more into Sumerian, Babylonian myths that kind of just piled it on together. A little bit of Bible threw in there, but mostly Babylonian, Sumerian, Egyptian. Because we've got a little bit of Isis in there too, Isis Osiris. My third book, this is going to be interesting, is about the Great Flood. So it's kind of funny that we're talking about Agam at this point.
Climate influenced erotica book.
Right.
Would you call it that?
So we're I'm pulling again same things together, the great flood from the Epic of Gilgamesh, and then bringing it in with Noah. So combining Utnapishtim and Noah into one character and seeing what happens.
Wow, biblical history mixed in. That's so powerful.
Yeah. And Lilith is still in the third book, right?
Yes, she is. Some magic happens there. So she will be on the ark. Oh, God, did I just give it away?
So you have these three books, and through it all, there's a very strong woman figure moving through myth and creation and history.
That's right. Interesting. Absolutely, yes. I think a lot of people think that we're so forward thinking now, but I think that our ancient matriarchs are so strong, and surprisingly, and even within the great patriarchs world, we have some really, really strong female characters there. Then we just need to dig it out and let it shine, so that we know that, hey, we come from really strong women even way back when, and they're great role models for us.
Great, thank you. And you yourself pointed out this nice coincidence of our talking about Agam and the climate crisis, and your third book being about the Great Flood.
That's right.
What about yourself personally, when you talk about the current climate crisis, what is it about the crisis that scares you personally?
Gosh, I'm not even sure if I'm scared. I wouldn't say I'm scared, to tell you the truth. I fear for our children and our children's children. They're really the ones that are going to experience the brunt of it. And of course, I've talked about the people on the edges. People are already experiencing a lot of climate-related tragedies all over the world. But they're so far away from me. Isn't that sad? And that's why when I wrote this piece, I was like, I'm not even as huge as the Obamas or the Clintons or the Trumps, who are in total denial of it being an issue.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine their life, how really fabulous and how far away maybe they are from what's truly happening. And I'm sure they go and they visit with the people that are affected by tragedies. And so they do get to see firsthand and shake people's hands and comfort them in these situations.
In the eye of the camera.
Right. I'm not as afraid. I'm still sadly living like it's no big deal, I turn on my laptop, not at all, but I do these little steps, and I'm hoping that a lot more people join me in this. It's so little, and my husband makes fun of me for it. He's like, you're trying to save the world one chopstick at a time. and I am, because I carry my own chopsticks. I don't use the disposable ones they give out at restaurants. I bring my own straws. I haven't even converted to stainless steel, because I have literally a drawer full of plastic straws. Why should I throw that away to buy stainless steel straws? I'm just going to pass it on to the next generation and the next generation, and we'll have straws for, eight more generations, but because there's just so much.
Yeah.
But then we won't be a burden on the, capitalistic society that all these straw factories out there hopefully will go out of business soon if we all join together and save our straws.
That's true. That's true.
Thing.
Yeah.
But it starts there. And then I spoke earlier about with you privately about how we unplug in the summers. My family, we go off the grid. We go on these wilderness treks, and we actually, what we do is we go off into the White Mountains, which is close. Close to the New Hampshire and Maine border. It's the Mount Washington, all those areas. And we do a lot of camping there and get to just enjoy the wilderness. And and enjoy the nature that we have here. And I think that if we make it fun for kids, that they'll learn more about the outdoors and be glad to turn over their smartphones in exchange for some time in the wilderness, some time with nature.
Well, May, when you think about then the climate crisis and that opportunity, particularly for your daughter to disconnect and for kids to disconnect and to be in nature, how does that give you hope?
You know, I think our kids are so into this now. We've got Greta Thunberg from Sweden. She, every Friday, she skips school and she sits in front of parliament and tries to convince her country's leaders to bring to set some goals for their country to bring their emissions down. She's talking about and you know, she is really galvanizing a lot of people all over the world because of her. She's amazing. She's 16 years old and she talks about this is my world too, and you know, with how you are using up resources, you're using my resources, my children's resources in advance. And so she's a powerful speaker. I want to get the word out there. I want kids to know who she is and hear her message and join her. I know my daughter is really passionate about the environment, and this is partly because maybe it's been 6 years. This is year six of her unplugging in the summer.
For 8 weeks.
Going out into the woods. Yes, yeah. For 8 weeks. Unplugging
the
entire
lucky.
Summer.
So
and
lucky.
She, you know, she learns how to ride horses. She goes on wilderness trips. Next week, she's going on a 5-day canoeing trip.
Beautiful.
Nonstop 5 days camping with her peers. So I wonder if this can be arranged all over the world, like just set up these things for kids. Her best friend does a whole different program from her, but she also does this, they call it like some kind of like a outdoor program where they spend so much time like learning how to camp, build fires, taking care of the environment in general. She's very passionate about it. And I'm thinking this is a trend that's happening with kids because this is their world and they care. They more than ever care about what kind of world we are leaving them. And they're rattling the
cages. They're holding us to account.
Yes. They're saying, hey, stop it. Stop it. Stop leaving us a crappy world, please. Do something for us. And our kids, et cetera. So, yeah.
And I think that's so important, that experience of the world beyond our usual walls, the urban environment, which sadly is part of the problem because we've become so disconnected. We don't see where our water is coming from and how it's so important to take care of where the water is coming from.
So true.
But if we can give kids that gift of seeing it and experiencing it and spending time in the wilderness, as you say, or just even having birds pointed out to them, you know, even in the urban environment, like, look at this tree, and do you know what this tree does? It makes such a huge difference by just being there, and we're not cognizant or we don't pay attention to that. And and I think, I agree, that's definitely a source of hope if we can give that to kids. And that's probably where this passion and this anger at the grown-ups for messing things up is coming from. Is
absolutely.
They don't want to lose this.
We've got animals going extinct. You know, certain species going extinct. You know, I was so proud of my kid because she's very active about that. She especially when the Notre Dame burned, and immediately there were people that put in money to rebuilding the cathedral. She started putting things out on her social media about, hey, what about these cathedrals, and posting pictures of you know, polar bears and and whales and, you know, like wildlife, all these animals and places that should also be taken care of. Just as much as we take care of our you know, Notre Dame and all these
our
wonderful
monuments.
Buildings that we have. Yes.
Good for her making that point.
Yeah.
Great. That's great.
So we'd like to shift and we'd love to get your take on climate change and the impacts of climate change that you foresee for the adult film industry.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know, it's hard to talk about it because I'm kind of an outsider in that world. I work for myself. I don't really, I don't work for the studios. So just this is my speculation. They're going to adapt. They always have. The adult film industry is so, again, resilient. Let's use that word on them as well. And so we always have to be very creative about how we make our money, how we do things. And I'm guessing this would also be another one of those things where we will adapt and we will survive, just like the people on the edges do. We will. You might see some tidal wave porn. I don't know. Tsunami porn. Who knows? I'm not even sure. How it's going to, what kind of form it's going to take, but we will survive.
Right.
That's great. And again, you've also shifted our perspective on who's on the edge. Like so many different people can be on the edge, depending on what you're talking about and what the situation is. And this is a perspective we don't often think about, that in the porn industry, you're living on the edge as well and you're putting yourself out there.
Yes. Yes, definitely. We put ourselves out there a lot.
Okay. I think that's it. We've covered all our questions. And
yay. Okay.
We can go on talking forever, I'm sure.
I think we could.
Yeah. But thank you for what you've shared, for sharing your perspective and your story. And I personally really appreciate how your own work and everything you are, a mother, a writer, an artist, a producer, it just brings this fresh twist also to the conversations we've been having with different authors. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be part of this project, and thanks for having me.
To listen to the full reading of Power Couple, visit the Agam website or check out the reading list of Agam the Climate Podcast on Spotify. Thanks for listening to Agam the Climate Podcast, a podcast about climate change without jargon. Continue the conversation with us next episode. We are a part of the Agam Agenda out of the Institute for Climate and Sustainable Cities based in the Philippines. You can hear past episodes and engage online with us on Facebook, Twitter, and agam.ph. That's agam.ph. Special thanks to Ground Bravo Studios, Far Eastern University, and you, our listeners, for your support.